Pastor Steve Nash, and welcome to my church. It's good to have you all here tonight. You know, I was thinking about New Jersey. A visitor from California mentioned the history here has been deeply embedded within our souls, of those that live here. I was thinking just the other day about Trenton, our capital. That's where the change in the war took place, right? It's where Washington started to get on the offensive. Then Princeton, and then on up to Morristown, and on it goes. So welcome to the heartbeat of our country, New Jersey. Let's bow together in prayer. Heavenly Father, we're thankful tonight to be here for such an occasion as this, where we can debate, openly debate, truths and convictions that we have and that we want to share. We want to compel others to believe the way that we might think. And Lord, we're thankful that we can present such a platform here in this church for such a purpose. We pray that you will engage, Lord, the listener, that the speakers will not speak rhetoric, but that they would really connect with the people in the pews. And Father, that we'd be challenged to make a difference in our generation for our country. Lord, we don't know how much longer we have if something doesn't happen in this nation of ours to turn us back to the ways that used to be so many years ago. But we pray that it would start even in New Jersey. Lord, we ask that you will guide us, bless us, and may your truth be quite evident when this is all over and done with. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. I'm going to have you all stand. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Flag's over here. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen. You may be seated.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Victoria. We are so thrilled that you are all here. We are working very hard, all of us, whether we're pro or con Convention of States, to defend liberty and freedom in our nation and to restore us to the places that we came from. The goal for tonight is that we would create unity. Our request is that everybody would listen and respect each other. And we are hoping so much that we would come to a place that we would be united and not divided. We absolutely appreciate you coming here. We know that each person here is a patriot, and we're just hoping that your questions will be answered and that you would support our movement. Thank you so much.
Just quickly regarding the format is that this is not a town hall debate, but this is a debate among two gentlemen who care deeply about this country, the way that each and every one of you do right now. So I'm going to just ask for a one moment of participation, because other than that, we're going to ask you to just listen, to think, to reflect, and come to a decision based on what you hear tonight. But our participation moment comes right now. I'm going to ask everybody here, if you have a deep and abiding love for the United States of America and our Constitution, please stand up. If you have a deep, abiding love for the United States and America and our Constitution, stand up, because so much of what is happening right now is trying to divide us. They are separating us by race, they are separating us by age, they are separating us by religion, by political preferences. But I just want you to look around here right now. Each and every person here cares deeply about this country. That's why we're here. And each and every person here is the kind of person that our founders wrote about and said, and I know that many of you have said this to me, that you would give your lives, your fortune, your sacred honor for our nation. So I just ask that you think about that we are together. Yeah, we may differ on the approach, the technique, but we are united on one thing, and that is the principles in this great nation. So thank you.
Good evening. Thank everyone for being here. My name is Richard Luzzi. I'm president of the Morris County Tea Party. I'm a member of the Convention of States New Jersey team. I'd like to thank the other members of the team, Victoria, Gary, Lisa Masek is here somewhere in the audience. Where is she? Roseanne Salanitri, who had a death in the family and cannot make it today. I'd also like to thank our videographers, Dan Haggerty and Doreen Finkel from studentsforabetterfuture.com. We have Valiant Video Productions of Old Bridge. The Students for a Better Future are live streaming this on YouTube at this time. I just want to say that if you've seen the recent polls, most of the country thinks that this country is on the wrong track. And how we got on the wrong track, I say, look at the book of Mark. And by that, I mean Mark Levin. And I don't mean the Liberty Amendments. I mean Ameritopia, where he argues quite persuasively that we are living in a post-constitutional administrative state. It's one of the things that Montesquieu warned of. It's what the founders on both the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists were concerned about. And what we're here to debate is a way to get back to the original intent of the Constitution. So with that, I would like to introduce our moderator for this evening, former State Senator Dick LaRosa.
We'd like to welcome you to the New Jersey Convention of the States debate between Mr. Andy Shapley and the Honorable Michael Farris. Andy Shapley is the lead attorney for the oldest conservative organization in America, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, founded in 1943. He frequently files legal briefs, writes model legislation, speaks widely, and was a guest recently on the Colbert Report. He is taught as an adjunct professor at Seton Hall University School of Law, and he has led young people on bus trips from New Jersey to the March for Life in D.C. for six straight years. Last month, he won a landmark jury decision in Camden. He is a co-founder of Conservapedia, a conservative online encyclopedia having many millions of page views, and a graduate of both Princeton University and the Harvard Law School. Opposing Mr. Shapley, we have Dr. Michael Farris. Mr. Farris is renowned for his many associations and notable endeavors. Among these, his association with Citizens for Self-Governance, Senior Fellow for Constitutional Studies. He's been head of the Convention of the States Projects. And Mr. Farris is also the founder and chancellor of Patrick Henry College and founding president of the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. He is best known for his defense of religious liberty and homeschooling, as well as American sovereignty. He is a well-read author and recipient of several prestigious awards. At issue tonight is whether our state legislatures can amend the Constitution to safeguard our freedom and God-given rights through an Article 5 Convention of the States with a goal to protect us from government overreach and tyranny. Mr. Shapley will be arguing in the negative that there is no way to stop that opportunity from turning into a runaway convention, and Mr. Farris will be arguing that there are enough safeguards in the Constitution to allow that to take place. As stated, Mr. Shapley will be debating the negative side, and ladies and gentlemen, those on both sides of this argument are very passionate in their beliefs. However, this is a debate, as was just stated, between Mr. Shapley and Mr. Farris and no one else. We respectfully, with great respect, request that you refrain from any outburst, pro or con, to the side being presented, and give both debaters the decorum and respect that they deserve for this debate. Please, we can't tolerate outbursts, yelling, or arguing points from the floor, because as was mentioned, this is not a town hall debate. This is a debate between two very highly educated and distinguished gentlemen on this particular issue. Should individuals continue to interrupt the debate, we will ask them to leave the premises. I'm sorry, but that has to be said because it is imperative that we maintain a certain level of decorum and dignity. We do not want to have to do that, but it is imperative that both Mr. Shapley and Mr. Farris be extended the courtesy of being able to present their points of view independent of any third-party audience commentary or outburst. For those of you who want to follow the agenda in terms of how this is going to take place, a few minutes before you finally sat down, a sheet was passed out which gives you the sequence of events in terms of how these things will go through this evening. The debate rules are fairly simple. We will open. We will have opening remarks both by Mr. Ferris and Mr. Shafley, and after that, it will be a question and rebuttal session from both gentlemen on a series of six questions, which I will be posing, and each gentleman will be taking their respective views on that particular question. Having said that, and welcome, please welcome once again Mr. Andy Shafley, and Mr. Michael Ferris. The opening remarks this evening, this has already been predetermined, will be coming from reasons as to why he supports an Article 5 Convention of the States. That will come from Dr. Michael Ferris.
Thank you so much, Senator. I'd like to begin by saying that Andy Shafley is my friend of many years, and his mother, Phyllis Shafley, the founder and president of Eagle Forum, is not only my friend, but is one of my great heroes. And having friends and heroes on the opposite side of a question is never what you would hope for, but friends and heroes can disagree and disagree respectfully, and I know that that will be the case between Andy and me tonight. I would start with this idea. Effectively, there are two constitutions in the United States. There's the Constitution as written, and there's the Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court. And the disparity between those two constitutions has profound effects on our society, all of which are dramatically bad. For example, the national debt that officially is a bit over $17 trillion, and if you did the accounting correctly, would be north of $100 trillion, is the result of runaway federal government spending. And the reason we have runaway federal spending is the Supreme Court has said there are no constitutional limitations on the power of Congress to tax and spend. We have regulations that are crushing jobs and industry and opportunity in this country. And there are two constitutional violations built into that, both approved by the Supreme Court. One is the fact that the agencies, like the Environmental Protection Agency and other bureaucracies, are able to make law despite the fact that Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution says all legislative authority is vested in the Congress of the United States. That's a violation of Article 1, Section 1. And then you have the misuse of the Commerce Clause. That's the substantive power that is most frequently misused. It was supposed to regulate shipping, not everything to do with economic activity. And that's being misused to crush our economy. Then we have invasions of privacy. The NSA, I'm sure they're taping the debate as well tonight, and invading our emails and many other invasions of our privacy that we all are aware of and greatly regret and are upset about it and, frankly, a little fearful. Then we see presidents, both Republican and Democrat, taking this nation into unilateral wars. The Congress is supposed to declare wars. Many of the wars we fought, probably we should have fought, but we should have fought them in a constitutional manner by first having a declaration of war from Congress. And then we have problems like the Common Core. The Common Core is a problem. In fact, my organization put out a pretty good movie about the Common Core, opposing the Common Core. But the Common Core is a symptom. It's not the whole thing. The problem is the federal government trying to regulate education, which has no business to do so. And the reason they do that is through another misuse of the General Welfare Clause, saying we can take money from the people, turn it back part of it to the states, and tell the states not to listen to the will of the voters of that state, but instead to listen to the will of Congress. That is a violation of the Republican form of government that every state is supposed to guarantee. We have a series of constitutional problems, some of the more important ones I've just laid out for you. Now, those are the symptoms. The cause is this. Washington, D.C. loves power. And it will do anything to retain its power. Washington, D.C. will never voluntarily give up any form of these power abuses. It won't come through the Supreme Court. I don't care who we elect to Congress. I don't care what we can do in the normal political process. There is no solution to the problems I've just laid out for you coming from Washington, D.C. Now, we can solve these problems, or we can at least substantially diminish these problems by proper constitutional language. The founders understood that when the Constitution was drafted, there would be problems that would develop in the future, and they wanted the opportunity for amendments. And George Mason gave us the form of opportunity that we need to use today, because he said there's going to be a day where the federal government abuses its authority. And when that day happens, you will never get the kind of amendments you need from Congress. It just will never happen. And if anybody thinks that Congress will ever voluntarily give up any of the power that we've been talking about so far, I have a rude awakening for you. It will never happen. It will never happen. The only way it happened, George Mason will say, the states have to have the unilateral ability to amend the Constitution by themselves, where Congress has no substantive role. A couple of minor procedural roles, yes, but no substantive role in the process. There's three stages to the process. Stage one is the application stage. 34 states, which is two-thirds of the several states, 34 states have to agree on the agenda. The agenda is set by each state saying in its application what is going to be the subject matters which are appropriate and lawful to discuss at the upcoming Article 5 Convention of the States. Now, we've had over 400 applications from the states in the history of the American Republic, and we've never had a convention because there's never been an agreement on the subject matter. An agreement on the subject matter is an absolute requirement to the convening of a convention. We have over 200 years of legislative precedent to prove that point. Stage two is where you write the actual amendments. The texts are written at the Convention of the States. And there, it's one state, one vote, simple majority rules. 26 states would approve the text of the various amendments that would fix the general welfare clause, fix the debt, fix the spending, fix the other problems that we've talked about under the application that we've drafted. It has already passed through three states, Florida, Alaska, and Georgia. Now, the 26-state process is heavily weighted on our side politically, because there are 26 states where Republicans control both houses of the legislature. If you count Nebraska, which is officially nonpartisan, but it's really a Republican state, we got 27. And there are six additional states where the Republicans control one house and the Democrats control the other. There is no possibility of getting a wild left-wing amendment through that scenario. You just have to suspend common sense to suggest such a thing. Then stage three is the ratification stage. That's even harder because 38 states have to ratify whatever proposals come out of the Article 5 Convention. So all it takes to defeat a proposed amendment is for one house in 13 states to vote no, because you have to have both houses. And so if the Senate in New Jersey votes yes and the House in New Jersey votes no, New Jersey voted no. You have to have simply one house in 13 states to defeat any amendment. The idea that something, you know, we could repeal the Second Amendment through that process is just simply a political fanciful. It's just simply, you have to suspend common sense to believe such a thing. This is what we need to do, because Washington, D.C. is going to destroy our liberty. Why haven't we done this already? Well, there are two basic reasons. One is we should never amend the Constitution for light and transient reasons. We only reserve amending the Constitution for extraordinarily important things. I would suggest that today is the day where that needs to happen, because the problems we're facing today, the destruction of liberty, is imminent. What we see with a president who thinks he can make law all by himself, if Congress won't pass the law, I have a pen. I can stroke the law into existence. Where we have a Supreme Court that legislates. Read the last page of Roe versus Wade. It looks like a statute. It walks like a statute. It talks like a statute. It's a statute. They legislated. We see these problems. The Supreme Court has said there's on 30 occasions approximately, there is no check on our power except for our own sense of self-restraint. I don't want to live in a country where the Supreme Court thinks that there's no legitimate checks and balances on that. These kind of dangers are the kind of dangers that would suggest it's high time that we have an Article 5 convention to take away the power of Washington, D.C. that they have tyrannically obtained over time and bring it back to the people and to the states. So the importance of the issue, I think we satisfy that criteria. Now, but there's a second reason that we haven't done this, and that is fear. And there are fear-based arguments coming mostly from good people, like my opponent tonight. But I would suggest that the fears are not valid, in fact. And when you weigh the fear of the fear that will be suggested compared to the reality of the tyrannical government that we're facing coming at us like a steam-driven train with the light on and we're in the tunnel and there's no getting away from it unless we do something differently, I would suggest it's time that we act and stop being afraid. Now, there are a lot of different fear arguments. I only have time for three right now. The first is the fear that the convention won't stick to the subject matter. And that argument has been based for a long time, and Eagle Forum has made this argument for a long time, that the original Constitution was written as a result of an illegal runaway convention. There are other conservative organizations, I've seen representatives here tonight, Hats On and others, that have made the same argument for a long time. Ladies and gentlemen, there's some intellectual schizophrenia going on. If you consider yourself a constitutionalist, you cannot believe that the Constitution was illegally adopted. It's like thinking that George Washington was a great American hero, but you know what? He was also a British spy. You know, pick sides. You got to decide whether you believe in the Constitution or not. And if you don't believe in the integrity of the Constitution, this is an argument that was advanced famously in the 70s and 80s by leftists that have argued this. Warren Berger has made this argument. The co-author of Roe versus Wade. I don't want to take constitutional lessons from the co-author of Roe versus Wade. Thank you very much. That is simply, to me, I refuse to believe. And we've given you a paper tonight. In fact, you didn't get it. You can get it on the way out. Two pieces of paper, front and back, actually one sheet, that gives you the actual history. You shouldn't get your history on this subject from the Common Core or from Warren Berger. You should get the history from the actual historical documents, and you can read why that defamation against the Constitution is simply not true. Second, the second fear-based argument is we don't know the rules for Article 5. Where do the rules, one state, one vote, for example, appear in Article 5? My answer to that is, well, let's take an analogy. The Sixth Amendment says that we have a right to a trial by jury. Where does it say that you have to have a unanimous verdict? Where does it say you have to have the presumption of innocence? Where do you say that you have to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt? None of those things. Every lawyer in the country, whether they're left, right, or middle, will tell you all three of those things are constitutional requirements for jury trials. Why? Because in 1791, when we adopted the Bill of Rights, those were the unfailable attributes of jury trials. We knew the procedure, and that's what the term jury trial meant. It included those procedural attributes. The same thing is true of a convention of states in Article 5. There are knowable and fixed attributes. The number one expert on Article 5 in the country, Rob Nadelson, is a retired constitutional law professor from the University of Montana. We have a 300-plus page manual that gives you the history of the 32 conventions of states that have been held in the country. All the rules, we know the rules, we know the history. For the exact same reason that we know the procedures for jury trials, we know the procedures from Article 5 from the exact same kinds of sources. You don't have to have it exactly in the text of the Constitution when you have an unbroken history, both in jury trials and in Article 5 conventions of the states. The final argument is that Congress will somehow manipulate the process. I've seen written that the fear that Harry Reid will appoint the delegates. It just cannot happen. There is no process. There is no possibility that Harry Reid. I mean, first of all, just, you know, John Boehner would also have to be, not that he's any great shakes, but it would be both, even if Congress could do it. And Harry Reid's probably not going to be the majority leader after 2014 elections. And so, but that's not the point. The point is, Congress can't appoint delegates from states any more than France can appoint delegates from Romania to the United Nations. It simply cannot happen. Congress has no authority. Remember the overarching purpose. Remember the history. The history is this. We wanted to have a process so the states could unilaterally propose amendments because we would never get the right kind of amendments from Congress. That is clear in the historical record. That is right from the Constitutional Convention itself. There is no possibility of a different outcome. And if there's any doubt about that, case has already been basically litigated. I litigated the case in the late 1970s and early 80s. Phyllis Schlafly raised money for me to litigate against Congress when they manipulated the process for the Equal Rights Amendment. The federal court held that you cannot change the rules in the middle of the stream. If you do so, you've behaved illegally, and we beat Congress. Phyllis and I beat Congress when they tried to change the rules before, when they tried to go beyond their authority. We won, we'll win again. The enemies of liberty have all the levers of power in Washington, D.C. Everything that we can reasonably fear is already in place, or the seeds of it are already sown, and it's coming at us at 100 miles an hour. If we think we can survive our liberty by doing the same old things over and over again, I don't think it'll happen. I don't want to be on the watch of people who finally gave up liberty because we're afraid to use the Constitution itself. I don't fear the Constitution. Andy, I ask you to join me.
Thank you, Dr. Ferris. Presenting the opposing view as to why he opposes an Article 5 Convention of the States, Mr. Andy Schlafly.
Thanks to all of you for being here. This is an exciting debate tonight. Thank you, Dr. Ferris, for coming to New Jersey. Did you notice we don't allow you to pump your own gas at the service stations here? It's because we're gracious to our visitors, so thank you for being here. However, if we don't like what you say, Christie will shut down the turnpike and you'll never get home. Okay, the problem is not the Constitution. It's not the Constitution. I listened to Dr. Ferris talk, and I didn't hear him say a single specific thing that would change the Constitution. Because the Constitution's a good document. It's a magnificent piece of work. It was crafted by conservatives at a unique time in our history. They shut the media out. These were giants like George Washington who presided over it. Who would preside over a new constitutional convention today? Most of the delegates to the Constitutional Convention in 1787 had fought alongside each other in the Revolutionary War. There was a spirit of cooperation. There was a Christian culture. People like Alexander Hamilton. Let's read up about Alexander Hamilton sometime. I know many of you have in this audience, how he gave his life for this country. He was killed in a duel right here in New Jersey because he loved this country and he repeatedly stopped Aaron Burr from getting control of it. He was a delegate to the original Constitutional Convention. Will those types of men and women today be delegates to a new Constitutional Convention? No, they won't. Because Article 5 says that a new constitutional convention will be called by Congress. Congress sets the rules. Congress will determine who's picked. Congress will lay the entire framework for any new Article 5 constitutional convention. It's not going to be George Washington. It's not going to be Alexander Hamilton. It's not going to be James Madison. It's not going to be secret from the media. They had strict rules in 1787 during the Constitutional Convention that you do not leak any of this to the media. And back then, the media was not like the media today. But they knew. They didn't want any pressure from the media. They didn't want any distortions. They didn't want anyone leaking something out that would then cause a distortion in the process. That's impossible today. A new Article 5 convention today would be picked by Congress, their rules, they define it, and who's Congress? We're talking about Harry Reid and John Boehner. Now, Dr. Ferris said, okay, it's not just Harry Reid, it's John Boehner, too. Listen, there are Tea Party people in Ohio right now who are trying to defeat John Boehner in his primary. That's how unhappy many of us are with John Boehner. And does anybody in this room think that John Boehner would stand up to Harry Reid in this process? I don't. Harry Reid would run all over him. And Harry Reid would be setting this Article 5 convention. Is that what we want? Is that what we want to entrust the future of our country in? Absolutely not. And the Constitution's not the problem. There's no specific change that's on the table tonight. That there's no change that all of us would agree on, because the Constitution is as close to perfect as it's going to be. It's not going to get any better. In Utah, they recently had a vote in the Utah legislature to call for a balanced budget amendment and call for a constitutional convention to pass a balanced budget amendment. And then someone stood up and asked, well, if we pass this balanced budget amendment, will Congress then use that as an excuse for raising taxes? And a supporter of that amendment said, yes, they probably will. And then when they do that, we can defeat them on Election Day. And people say, you got to be kidding me. I'm not going to support something that's going to end up raising taxes. And they defeated a call for a constitutional convention to have a balanced budget amendment. So our side is not even sure we want a balanced budget amendment. If we're not sure about that, what are all these other changes that people have in mind? I can't think of any. Maybe there are a few. Maybe there are a few we could agree on. But there's a mountain of bad stuff that liberals want to put into the Constitution. And any new Article 5 convention is going to have just as many liberals as conservatives. And they have a huge agenda of what they want to put in. There are lists of organizations that are greater in number than the people in this room who are calling for a constitutional convention to limit free speech in connection with elections, to overturn Citizens United. And you can go on the internet. I was on this afternoon looking at it, and the list went on and on, not of people, but of organizations on the left who want to change our Constitution to limit our right to free speech at election time. There were numerous organizations that began with the first word, occupy. Occupy this, occupy that, occupy this. Many organizations, their first word was green. Green this, green that, green that. You know what? They want to change the Constitution. We do not want to let them do that. An Article 5 convention would give them the opportunity to put in the changes they want to do. Retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens wants to add just 5 itty-bitty little words to the Second Amendment. That's all, just 5 itty-bitty little words. Not a big deal, right? Well, those 5 itty-bitty little words would gut the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms. Take away that individual right. And this is a former Supreme Court justice who's pushing it. I'm sure he'd love for there to be an Article 5 convention. I'm sure Harry Reid could get him installed as a delegate. Who knows? Maybe he even preside over it with the prestige of being a former Supreme Court justice. And there goes our Second Amendment right. Why do we want to do this? Why would we work towards that goal? Notice how the media is not opposing this. Notice how liberals are not opposing this idea of an Article 5 convention. They'd welcome it. Why are we spending our resources on our side pushing this thing? Now, when you have a court case, you have experts. You bring experts into a trial to tell people who have experience in the topic, people who can speak with a great deal of knowledge. Now, Dr. Ferris said that he was involved in some litigation back in connection with the Equal Rights Amendment. But that's not really the type of expertise that's needed to comment on what an Article 5 convention is like. The kind of expertise that's needed is someone who's been to big conventions, who knows how they're run and how badly they can go. Someone who has been many times to a convention, maybe to a state constitutional convention, as Daniel Webster was. Daniel Webster was a delegate to the Massachusetts State Constitutional Convention 1820. He's perhaps the greatest statesman of the 19th century, in other words, the 1800s, Daniel Webster. He was an attorney. He argued before the Supreme Court. He was in Congress, in the House, and then the Senate, and so on. And here is what he said about having a new constitution. Here is what that expert's opinion was. And it was that the original constitutional convention was a miracle. He said, Miracles do not cluster. And what happened once in 6,000 years may not happen again. Hold on to the Constitution. That's Daniel Webster. There are other experts. Justice Scalia, he recently said that the idea of a new constitutional convention is scary, and he has no idea what would come of it, and he's very much against it. There's someone who's been to more national conventions than probably anybody else in the history of the country, certainly more than anyone else who's alive. She attended every single Republican National Convention from 1952 to 2012, except for two, as a delegate or as an alternate delegate. So that's 60 years of attending the Republican National Convention. And I happen to know her. She's my mother. And she says, do not allow, absolutely not allow a constitutional convention to consider changes and amendments to our Constitution. Conventions are chaotic. They're run by the chairman. Things happen that break the rules. She said, all you have to do is look at the Democratic National Convention. It just happened in 2012 when the chairman tried to reinsert God back into the platform. The platform committee had taken God out. Obama got word of this. He said, uh-oh, that causes me a problem for my reelection. Put it back in. The chairman gets the delegates all together and he says, okay, we've got a motion here to put God back into our platform. All in favor say aye. There were some ayes. All against say nay. There was a louder chorus of nays. It takes two-thirds approval by the rules to amend the platform on the floor. There were more nays than ayes. The chairman was inept in handling. He wasn't even experienced enough. My mother knows how these things work, but he didn't even know. He said, no, maybe you misunderstood me. Maybe you misunderstood me. We're moving to put God back into our platform. So let's try this again. All in favor say aye. There were some ayes. All against say nay. It was louder. It was even louder that time. There were more nays the second time he tried it. Down goes the gavel. Amendment accepted. Amendment approved. He amended and put God back in the platform, even though the delegates didn't want to do it. The chairman has that power. That's the way conventions are run. And there's a liberal run in the new constitutional convention. Forget it. There are no rules. He's not going to follow the rules. He's going to have voice votes, and there's going to be stuff in there that's awful. Now, Dr. Ferris says, no big deal. No big deal. We'll stop it. After it comes out of that constitutional convention, will prevent that thing from passing 38 states because it still has to pass 38 states. Listen, whatever comes out of a new constitutional convention is going to be like a rocket. Okay? You're going to have to be Superman to stop that thing. It's going to have all the media behind it, all the attention that went into it. Everyone's going to be talking about it, and it's going to be virtually impossible to stop that thing. Dr. Ferris says, no problem. We got Republican legislatures in many of these states. They'll stop it. These Republican legislatures. Listen, no Republican legislator, no Republican state legislator, or no Republican congressman, except for a few exceptions you can count on one hand, will stand up to the power of the media. None of them will. If you look at how the 17th Amendment was passed, that provides for the direct election of senators, and look at that history. That was basically what's opposed by state legislatures because it took away their power to pick their senators. It's opposed by conservatives, opposed by Tea Party people today. Many people think that that 17th Amendment, in shifting the election of senators from state legislatures to the people, was one of the wrong turns that this country made. When that came out as an amendment, it passed unanimously in something like 52 out of the 72 legislative chambers, passed unanimously. Nobody stood up against the media on that thing, and nobody stands up against the media today. Anything comes out of that constitutional convention is going to fly through the states. That's just a given. Because the media can destroy anybody they want to. If the media wants that thing passed, they'll get passed. We see that today. We see when a state passes a bill, as happened in Arizona, passed what seemed to be a pretty straightforward bill, which is if you have a religious objection, doing business with somebody, if you're a photographer and you have a religious objection, being hired as a photographer for a same-sex marriage, then you don't have to do it. You can honor your conscience rather than being forced to do something against your conscience. And the Arizona legislature passed that, and then the media descended on Arizona, and the governor vetoed it. Because once the media gets involved, the game's over. Now, Dr. Ferris talks about George Mason as wanting this Article 5 provision. Yeah, George Mason was an anti-federalist. He was against the Constitution. A good man. You know, I have nothing against him. But he was against the original Constitution. He opposed it. He opposed its passage. So Dr. Ferris will say, why is Article 5 in there? If we're not going to use it, why is it in there? Well, first of all, it's in there because someone who was against the Constitution wanted it in there. So that's you got to take what he put in there with a grain of salt. And number two, it may be useful if Congress did something like canceled all elections so that it did not refuse to hold any elections anymore. If there was something of that order, something that was so severe to our country, a civil war, an invasion, you know, Britain burned D.C. in 1812. If something like that happens and we can't communicate with our congressmen and something fundamental change is needed, then maybe we go to Article 5. But we're nowhere near that today. Thank you.
We're going to move now into the debate section of the debate. There's a series of six questions that both gentlemen will answer. The question will take about 30 seconds. It will be followed by a two-minute answer, a two-minute rebuttal answer, and then a 30-second rebuttal from the gentleman who will be answering first. And the first question is, again, has been predetermined, and it will be given to Mr. Andy Shafley. And the question as posed and as agreed to, is there any better way to safeguard our freedoms from federal overreach than a convention of the states? You have 2 minutes.
Politics is challenging. And the safeguard of our freedom is something we need to do every day. We need to participate in elections. We need to fight for those freedoms on a personal level, as organizations, and in as active a manner as possible. It's not by changing a piece of paper. It's not by throwing a Hail Mary pass. It's not by taking shots from half court in a basketball game. It's by pushing forward against the resistance and overcoming the resistance every day. Maybe it means waking up a little bit earlier. Maybe it means going on bus trips to the March for Life to get a 500,000 people on the mall, as I've been doing the last 6 years. But it's not through gimmicks. Gimmicks are not going to help. In fact, they can be counterproductive. It's not by taking advice from talk radio, who are entertainers. It's by listening to the experts who've been fighting these conservative battles for decades and pushing forward and overcoming the resistance. Liberals are not resisting this. This is easy. This is like taking the football and running sideways. You got to run forward. You got to run into the resistance. You've got to overcome the opponent. Look at where they start squawking the most on social issues and other things, on voting issues. That's where the resistance is the greatest, and that's where we need to push the hardest. That's how we safeguard our liberties. It's not going to come with pie in the sky stuff. These ideas that are, way out there that's like, oh, if we just, rewrite the Constitution, we'll be fine. No, when we have problems, when there are obstacles, if you take, you take a trip to Las Vegas and bet everything you have on the roulette wheel, which is what an Article 5 convention is, then the problems get much worse.
For Dr. Ferris, once again, the question, is there any better way to safeguard our freedom from federal overreach than a convention of the states?
Andy, please just call me Mike. I just Dr. Ferris stuff. Andy's answer is let's just try to do a better job of the same old thing that we've been doing a long time. We elected a lot of Tea Party candidates in 2010. Washington, D.C. had more effect on those candidates than those candidates had on Washington, D.C. The definition of insanity is to keep trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes. There is no scenario where we can fix the kind of problems where we have a plan, an actual plan, to get Washington, D.C. to relinquish its power. Ronald Reagan could not get rid of the Department of Education. If that can't happen under Ronald Reagan, it's not going to happen today by just doing it a little harder. I would point out that Andy's assertions that there's A, is going to be a constitutional convention, there's no such constitutional convention on the table, and B, that Congress can control it, are facts he's making up out of whole cloth. There is no historical basis for such an assertion. There is no authority that would be a recognized legal authority. There is nothing that would be an appropriate historical analogy that would give a basis for that. They just repeat their same arguments over and over again, speaking ex cathedra. The founding fathers are the ones that can speak with authority. And, you know, it was interesting that you demean George Mason. By the way, George Mason made the proposal, but the convention, the amendment for Article 5 was passed unanimously in the Constitutional Convention. Nim-con means without objection. And so the idea that you pick on George Mason, you're going to have to pick on George Washington, James Madison, and everybody else because they unanimously agreed with Mason's suggestion. This is not a Hail Mary pass. This is hard work getting district captains in 3,000 legislative districts across the country. My time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris. The second question.
He gets a 30-second rebuttal.
I'm sorry, 30-second rebuttal for Mr. Shapley.
You can look in your pocket constitution, which we have extra copies out there, Article 5. It says Congress shall call a convention. It's Congress that calls it. And that word call means Congress will set the rules, determine who comes, how long it'll meet, everything else. It's Congress that has that power. And that's just nuts. Congress are the people we're unhappy with. Why would we give them that power to do even more damage than they have been?
Thank you very much. The second question we'll start with Mr. Ferris, and I'm sure some of you will appreciate this question. Why don't liberals and the media support a convention of the states?
Oppose,
I'm sorry.
The question is that Andy helped draft is why don't the liberals oppose a convention of the states? They do oppose our application for a convention of the states. That long list that you recited, we've contacted all those organizations that actually have a website or an email address. A bunch of them aren't really real organizations. Somebody just put them on a list. But all of those organizations, we've contacted them all and asked them, do you support our convention of the states? They go, no, we don't support. It's like saying, who supports filing legislation? Well, the left supports filing legislation for their proposals. And Vermont's proposed a convention of the states for its proposals. It doesn't mean they can hijack our convention of the states. And, you know, should we run people for the Senate? Well, the left runs people for the Senate. It's dangerous to run people for the Senate because the left wants to do it. It's a procedure. It's a process. It's in the Constitution. If they can get 34 states to repeal Citizens United, do an application for repealing Citizens United, more power to them. I don't see any scenario where they can do that. There is no basis for it, and you're just making stuff up. Call the convention. Rob Nadelson has proven the point. What can Congress do in the call? The call means time, place. That's it. It doesn't mean they can appoint the rules or appoint the delegates or any other things that you're asserting out of whole cloth. You're just making it up. By the way, Morton Blackwell has been to almost as many conventions as your mother. He supports a convention of the states. He's a National Republican committeeman. He and his wife, his wife is the Eagle Forum director of Virginia. It's the one, he told me, it's the second issue in 50 years of marriage that they've disagreed with politically. So not everybody who goes to Republican conventions, I would respectfully suggest that a convention of the states is completely different from an Article 5 convention, or a Republican convention is different than an Article 5 convention, just as a Little League baseball game is different from the World Series. They have the word convention in common, but nothing else.
Once again, for Mr. Shapley, why don't liberals in the media oppose a convention of states?
They don't oppose it because they want it. Because the media knows they're going to take it over, and the liberals know they're going to take it over. Who's going to stop them? Mike has not explained who will stop them. He says, well, there's no precedent for it. Mike's view is they can call it and set the time and place, but they can't pick the people. Who is going to stop Harry Reid from picking the people? Nobody is. Nobody can. What are we going to do? Run to the courts and say, Harry Reid, you can't pick all these people. You can't assign retired Justice Stevens as the chairman. You can't do that, Harry Reid. Who's going to stop him? Courts aren't going to stop him. The courts are just as bad as Congress is. Nobody can stop him. It's like opening your house, taking all the locks off your house and opening it up to the world in a bad neighborhood and saying, well, nobody's going to come and steal stuff from your house. No, no, they're not going to come. Who's going to stop them? Nobody's going to stop them. It's a blank check. It's given a blank check to the media and to liberals. Media will have a field day with this thing. I mean, just imagine. They will be all over this. It will be nonstop coverage. It'll be Watergate all over again, where the media is just driving this thing where they want it to go. They'll be telling us who the delegates are. Is that going to be able to be kept secret? No, of course not. The public will know who the delegates are, and then the media is going to be doing an investigation into all these delegates' lives. And then the delegates are going to start to get terrified. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to lose my job unless I do what the media wants. You know, I'm going to get smeared all over the papers unless I do what the media wants. And pretty soon, that media owns the convention, and that's why they're fine with it. They're just fine with an Article 5 convention. They want one. Well, if they want one, that means we don't want one.
Rebuttal from Mr. Ferris.
Andy, fear, your fear, for your fears to be reasonable, you've got to have some facts. And one way to do, well, there's a rule of law that when a person doesn't tell the truth about one thing, they're presumed to not be telling the truth about anything else. You cannot find one liberal organization that endorses our Convention of the States application. You can't find one state legislator. If the liberals supported it, why aren't they voting for it in the states? It is only conservatives that have voted for our Convention of the States. You're just asserting things out of ex cathedra, and you don't have either facts, you don't have any facts to prove any of the things that you're asserting.
Next question will be started answering by Mr. Shapley. Why did the founders put the convention provision in Article 5 if they never meant for us to use it? Is there any situation where you would or would not support a convention of the states?
Well, as I said, the person who put it in was someone who was opposed to the Constitution. Are there any instances where we would use an Article 5 convention? Very few, but it is possible. As I said, if martial law were installed and elections were canceled, which does happen in other countries, and there are no more elections, then the states could have their convention call that would then force Congress to call an Article 5 convention. So that's a possibility. The country was young when the Constitution was first enacted, much weaker than foreign powers. They didn't know. Maybe a foreign power would come in and conquer some of the country. If that happened today and a foreign power came in and took control of some of the country, took control of D.C., then maybe an Article 5 convention should be called. But there are very few examples. And as our country gets bigger, as communication gets better, that's another reason they may have had this provision, Article 5. Back in 1787, communication was not that good with your representatives. And if your representatives in Washington were just, you couldn't communicate with them, you didn't know what they were doing, then the states could call a convention. But communication is fine today, air travel is fine. These are not, today, it's very difficult to think of an instance where there's an Article 5 convention, and it's certainly not an instance today when the liberals have control of the media and have control of the Senate. Today is certainly not the time to have an Article 5 convention.
Once again, repeating for Mr. Ferris, why did the founders put the convention provision in Article 5 if they never meant for us to use it? Is there any situation where you would or would not support a convention of the states?
Obviously, I support a convention of the states because I don't want to wait until martial law is imposed. The correct response to martial law is get your guns, boys, let's go take them out. And if we think that we're going to wait until martial law, and if a convention of the state is the right weapon to fight back against martial law, it shows you how out of touch Andy is for political reality, because that is waiting too long. We have an opportunity today. Tyranny is on the doorstep, but it's not quite here. And I don't want to wait until we're living under martial law. Your suggestion that the reason the founders put in this provision was because of fear of foreign powers. Andy, have you read the Constitutional Convention's notes? Can you? I'll buy you a steak dinner at the fanciest restaurant in the world if you can find one word of that in the Constitutional Convention. They told us why. They were not afraid of foreign powers. They were afraid of Washington, D.C. They did not want, if Washington, D.C. abused its power, they wanted the states to have the ability to overcome. So you're, you know, the media, we're fear of the media, fear of, okay, but you don't propose anything other than, let's just try harder. You know what's going to stop them? You know what's going to stop the media? What's going to stop Congress? The same thing that stopped them on the ERA. Your mother and I stood shoulder to shoulder, and we stopped them. We went to court, and that was part of it, but we also beat them in the state legislature. On the floor of the Georgia legislature, a senator told me this later, he passed out the decision that your mom and I won in the federal district court in Idaho, and the Georgia legislature voted down the ERA based on our work together. And the idea that we're going to run, you know, that Phyllis Schlafly is running afraid of the media is preposterous. She's the most courageous, best media person I've ever met in my life, and she's not afraid of the media. She trained me. I'm not afraid either.
Rebuttal. 30 seconds.
You're right about that, Mike. My mother's not afraid of the media, but my mother's not a state legislator, and state legislators are. Almost all politicians are. Almost everybody is, really. There's very few people who can stand up to the media, and the media will take this thing over. As I said, the person who put it in was someone who put it into the Constitution, was someone who was opposed to the Constitution. And times have changed as to whether that Article 5 would be useful. Over the years, repeatedly, Americans have rejected invoking Article 5. So it's important not just to look at 1787, but also look at why for 227 years, good Americans have said no. We're not going to go in that direction, and we should not go in that direction today either.
Mr. Schlafly, Article 5 required 38 states to ratify any amendments, which means a single house of the legislature in 13 states is all it takes to defeat any proposed amendments. Considering that Republicans control both houses in 26 state legislatures, how could anything from the far left ever be ratified?
Because the momentum of these amendments becomes impossible to stop. Now, this is one thing I lived through growing up, was stopping the Equal Rights Amendment, and how difficult that was to stop the Equal Rights Amendment with all the momentum behind it. Let me give you two examples in the 70s that I remember vividly. I was a teenager. One example was the liberals counted the votes and had the votes in Illinois for Illinois to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, which would have been the 36th state, and that would have then made ratification virtually assured. So the battleground in ERA was Illinois, because 35 had passed, so you need 38. Illinois would have been the 36th, and that would have tipped it over, and they would have gotten 38 easily after that. And the liberals had the votes to pass it with all the pressure they were putting on these state legislators. And the day of the vote came, and the liberals call the vote. They don't call the vote unless they have the votes, and they came up short. And a liberal got on TV and said, we had the votes, we came up short. There's some power on the other side that is just more powerful than us. You know, referring basically to God without saying it. I mean, miracles sometimes do happen, but you can't count on them happening again and again. The other example I want to tell you from that ERA fight was how there was one Illinois state legislator, maybe a Republican, who was standing there ready to cast her vote as the decisive 100th vote so that she could be the one who casts the decisive vote no matter which side that vote was on. That's how these politicians think. She just wanted to be the decisive vote. She didn't care if it was for ERA or against ERA. She just wanted to be the decisive vote. And you can't stop the momentum of these amendments once it comes out. I don't care whether they're Republican or Democrat. You're not going to stop it if it comes out of a constitutional convention.
I have seen God deliver a lot of miracles. When I started the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, we were told we could never beat the Teachers Union, the State Boards of Education, the State Superintendents Association, and the Principals Association. The Teachers Union is the most powerful lobbying group in every state legislature in the country. We were told we couldn't win. We trusted God, we organized a small remnant, and we won time after time after time. And today, homeschooling is legal in all 50 states, despite the media, despite the powers of the left. I've seen that happen in many, many locations. That wasn't 2 minutes. Is that a rebuttal?
No, he says two minutes. Keep going.
Okay. All right. I've seen God deliver miracles in legislatures, in courtrooms, in all kinds of places. When I started Patrick Henry College, the front page of the Washington Post ran an article of a bunch of experts that said it's impossible to start a successful liberal arts college in this day and age. College is 14 years old. We've had many, many measures of success, not the least of which is we won 8 out of the last 10 national moot court championships, including the last 6 in a row. What the left says is impossible, what the Washington Post, the media said was impossible, and they've attacked us time and again, God's delivered. I am not afraid of any of these things that you've been promoting fear all night. And Andy, you shouldn't be afraid either. You come from a very courageous family. When you were a teenager, I was a young lawyer at your mother's side working on this stuff. And we won because we were right, we organized, and we trusted God. And there is no basis for all the fear that you're advancing. There's not facts behind your fear. You're making stuff up. You're just making stuff up. And that's not fair to these people. It's not fair to the members of Eagle Forum. It's not fair to anybody in this country for you make up stuff and just go out and do that. You've got to have facts, Andy. You've got to have facts. One more example, when you said that it was because of foreign powers that they put Article 5 in, you just made it up. And that's not fair to people. We need to stick with the historical record and not make stuff up.
30-second rebuttal.
Mike, that's great that you started a college. I mean, I think that's wonderful. Liberals don't care if you start a college. You know, liberals don't care that much about homeschooling either. In fact, people homeschool the most are public school teachers. Liberals do care about the Second Amendment, about abortion, about same-sex marriage. They do care if a new constitution is going to be written or if this constitution is going to be revised. And they're going to put everything they have into it. I'm not making stuff up. Look at how the 17th Amendment passed. When it came out and went to the states, 52 out of 72 state legislative chambers passed it unanimously. Unanimously. Do you think those legislators really wanted to pass that amendment? You think there was no dissent? They felt they had to.
Time. And the final question, we will start with Dr. Ferris. The original Constitutional Convention was run by conservatives, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and others. Wouldn't Harry Reid and the Senate pick liberals to run a new Constitutional Convention?
Congress calling the convention says the legal authority that we have, 32 conventions. Congress calling a convention means they name the time and the place. Actually, they name the time and the place of the first meeting. If they put it in Washington, D.C., we'll convene it and move it to Oklahoma City or someplace else. It will not be held in Washington, D.C. That's what the language means. Just as the jury trial means the things that it means, the examples I gave you earlier, a convention of the states appoint the delegates, the states give the instructions to the delegates, the states give limitations to the delegates, just like they did in the original Constitutional Convention. Delaware gave delegates instructions to not vote for anything that didn't have the one state, one vote rule in. And that's why we got the U.S. Senate, is because Delaware's delegates follow their state's instructions. And so the states control the process from beginning to end, and you have no legal authority to suggest to the contrary. There is no example, there's no historical record, there is nothing that would suggest that Congress can propose such a thing. It's just a fantasy. It's boogeyman tactics. And, you know, we're at the last question. And here we are. There is no solution to runaway Washington, D.C. that you've offered. Not one. Not any realistic thing that we can do. And we're losing. I've been in this fight for a long time. Longer than you, not as long as your mom. For 34 years, I've been doing this full time. We're losing. We're going the wrong direction. And I hate to tell you this. Liberals do care about homeschooling. They do care. And they fought us hard. And we won. And you helped us win as well. You know, you've been a fan of homeschooling. You've helped us. You know what the fight is. Because they know what we're doing is we're training the spear tip of the next generation. People have not been controlled by the states. They do not want a remnant of really smart kids who believe in the principles of freedom unleashed on the public square. They care. We fought. We won. We can fight, and we can win again.
And once again, from Mr. Shapley, the original Constitutional Convention was run by conservatives, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and others. Wouldn't Harry Reid in the Senate pick liberals to run a new Constitutional Convention?
He certainly would. In fact, I doubt there'd be a single conservative delegate to a new Constitutional Convention. Article 5 says Congress has the power to call it. It doesn't give any power. Article 5 does not give any power to the states in terms of how it's called. Yeah. As well, there's no precedent for this or that. Yeah, there's no precedent for any of this because we've never had one. For 227 years, good people have said, don't go in that direction. And we shouldn't go in it either. So there's no precedent for anything Mike says either. There is the language of the Constitution. Congress calls it. Congress is the only entity that's given the power to control a constitutional convention. Of course, once it convenes, then the delegates can do whatever they want. As in any convention, you get a chairman and the chairman runs it. The chairman won't be George Washington this time. The chairman may be retired Justice John Paul Stevens, who wants to add just five itty-bitty little words to the Second Amendment, which would take away all of our right to own guns. I do want to mention one more thing, and I think Mike will have a chance to rebut this. Mike says on his website that it'll be one vote for each state, and there is no way it's going to be one vote for each state. It'll be one man, one vote, because there have been a series of Supreme Court rulings in the 60s, which post-date many of the earlier conventions that Mike alludes to, that says you have to do this in proportion to population. You have to do, you know, anything in government. State legislatures have to be in proportion to population. It has to be one man, one vote. You cannot have a deliberative governmental function that is not representative to the population. So the parts of the country that will have the biggest number of representatives are Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, big cities. It won't be with New Jersey having equal stature as well as the other states.
Thank you. 30-second rebuttal.
The one state, one man, one vote cases are not applicable to this. Otherwise, the U.S. Senate would be unconstitutional. It is one state, one vote in step one. It is one state, one vote in step three. It is one, and those are clear in the text of the Constitution. And how it would become unconstitutional only in step two is just simply nonsensical. We do have precedent. There have been 32 interstate conventions. These 32 interstate conventions that have drafted various kinds of governing documents are much more applicable precedent than Republican conventions or Democrat conventions. 32 conventions, we know the rules. It will be one state, one vote.
That concludes the Q&A section of the debate. According to my agenda, is Assemblyman here or not? No. Okay, we'll continue then. At this point, it's time for closing remarks. And again, according to predetermined agreement, Mr. Shapley has 10 minutes for his closing statements.
In a letter from Chief Justice Berger, Warren Berger, to my mother, dated 1986, he said, one reporter asked what I thought about a constitutional convention, and my answer was essentially that it would be a, quote, grand waste of time. Okay, this will be better.
Yeah.
It works better, more consistently. Okay. So there's Berger. This is fading out, too.
Thank you.
Okay. That's all right. That's all right. That's Chief Justice Berger saying it would be a grand waste of time. And he repeated that in additional letters. I put some of them out there on the table so you can look at it. Justice Scalia expressed his concern about it. Many others have expressed their concern. My concern is not just that it's a waste of time. My concern is that it is diverting resources that we need to solve the real problems. And that it's sending a message out, this whole enterprise of change the Constitution is sending the wrong message out to the American public, to our students, that there's something wrong with the Constitution. There's nothing wrong with the Constitution. Mike hasn't said a single thing tonight about anything in the Constitution that he thinks can be improved. Haven't heard a single thing of what he thinks he can improve in the Constitution, and I doubt he can come up with anything that he could improve in the Constitution. The Constitution is not the problem. Imagine if someone said, well, we've got all this wrong behavior, illicit conduct, disrespect. Why don't we change the Ten Commandments? Now, the Ten Commandments are not the problem, okay? The people who may not follow the Ten Commandments, but you don't start talking about changing the Ten Commandments because the Ten Commandments are fine and the Constitution is fine. And this talk about changing the Constitution is hurtful to what we're doing. We want to be telling people to adhere to the Constitution. We want to be doing everything we can to enforce the Constitution. And it's hurtful to have a project where people are trying to change the Constitution. Now, who's behind this? We don't know who's behind it. Mike said he's in favor of transparency. He wants transparency at the new Constitutional Convention, even though our founders all rejected that idea. Where's the transparency in this project? Nobody knows who's funding this. At least it hasn't been disclosed. This costs money. This costs millions of dollars, this project. Nobody knows where that money's coming from. Perhaps it's coming from some businessmen who made a few bucks, and now they think that they can take their money and change the country too. Okay, we just went through that with Mitt Romney. Okay, Mitt Romney made himself a fortune. They think that qualifies him to become president. And a lot of people hitched themselves to that project and said, yeah, Mitt Romney is going to be president because he's worth $200 million. No, that was doomed from day one. And we lost a lot of precious time. We lost the election, obviously, and it was just going down the wrong road to go in that direction. And this project, I think, is similar. I think it's probably funded by some businessmen, and they're going in the wrong direction. They didn't consult the experts. I know they didn't consult my mother. I don't think they're that interested in politics, really. I don't think they understand how conventions work. And it's going in the wrong direction. Some of the language they use, I don't like. You go on their website, and they'll say, here's a solution that's as big as the problem. I don't like that kind of reasoning. A solution as big as a problem. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of people who go gambling after they lose their job. They got problems. They got debts. They can't pay their bills. They need a solution as big as the problem, and then they make a big mistake. Go gambling or do something else that's terrible. Sometimes abortions are probably performed because someone gets there, I need a solution as big as the problem. I'll get an abortion. Now, I don't like the language. This is not conservative thinking. This is way off the map. It's the wrong direction. Mike has a great organization. There's a lot of good work he could be doing where it counts. On issues where the liberals are fighting us tooth and nail, we could really benefit from having another player on our team come and fight where the real battles are being won or lost, okay? Battles like same-sex marriage, battles like the pro-life movement, Second Amendment, things like that. And I'm not as pessimistic as Mike is about where we are right now. Certainly on the budget issue, things are in a bad shape. Okay, so financially things have been going downhill. But we still have elections. We still have the ability to participate in these elections, and we should. We should be devoting, in an election year, we should be devoting all our extra time to winning some of these elections, which we can do, which we have done in some areas of the country. On some issues, we are making progress. On the pro-life issue, we are making progress. That's what I spend my extra time on, the pro-life issue. And I know it's important because I know how much liberals fight me on it. I know how important it is to them, and it's hard work just to gain a few yards here and there. And then we had a breakthrough in Texas, where Texas passed this omnibus pro-life bill that shut down nearly half of the clinics, abortion clinics in Texas. And that is huge. That is a game changer that helps with many other issues as well. And when you win on the hard-fought social issues, then the financial issues become easier. I disagree that we're going to save this country by focusing only on the financial issues. To me, that's the easy way out, and it's not going to work. That's what Mitt Romney thought he was going to win the presidency with. Just focus on the financial issues. The social issues are harder. They're divisive. They're contentious. People get nasty on the other side. But that's how you know you're actually doing something that's meaningful. That's how you know you're actually making progress, when you do some work on the social issues. And I would encourage Mike to take his resources and put them into the social issues and not on this pie in the sky, Hail Mary pass that's just going to get intercepted and run for a touchdown by the other side.
I send out teenagers to help in races all over the country, and I'll do it again in 2014, trying to stop Washington, D.C. from throwing away our freedom as fast as they possibly can. But I have no illusions that anything I do is going to do anything more than slow down the rate of the slide into the abyss. It's not going to happen. And so we have to ask ourselves a really important question. Do we think that Washington, D.C. is going to continue on the path of the abuse of power? If you think that, then we do have to have a solution that's as big as the problem. And that means simply this. The states have to assert their authority. We've got to take the credit cards away from the teenagers. We're going to do more than this. By the way, I didn't get an actual rebuttal to your first speech until right now. Here are two changes to the original Constitution that I would do. Number one, I would prohibit the use of treaties to control domestic policy in the United States. I would change the Supremacy Clause so that's not possible. Number two, I would change how we appoint the Supreme Court. I don't want the Supreme Court appointed by the President and ratified by the Senate, or confirmed by the Senate. I want the states to appoint the Supreme Court. The idea comes from they like international law these days. Let's hoist them on their own petard. And there's 46 countries in the European Court of Human Rights. There are 46 judges. Every country appoints its own judge. They sit in randomly drawn panels of about nine. When they need to have the whole court together, they do it in paper. We can do the exact same thing in the Supreme Court. appoint somebody for 8 years only. I don't want them currying favor. You want to have an independent court, 8 years only, and then they're out. Each state appoints one. You can rotate them like we rotate the Senate. I want to make that change because we had no experience when we founded the country in a court that has no limitations. And the Supreme Court has said 30 times, there is no limitation on our power except our own sense of self-restraint. We got to fix that. We got to have some real checks and balances on the Supreme Court. The reason that we're losing elections is people have no hope. They have no hope because we're fighting on the enemy's turf. Big cities, big media, and big government do matter a lot in Washington, D.C. and New York City. They don't matter all that much in Boise, Idaho, in Pierce, South Dakota, in Little Rock, Arkansas. What matters in those states are the calls and letters they get from their constituents. And I am convinced, and I've talked to several hundred state legislators, the legislators are convinced if we can get, on average, 100 people in 75% of the districts of the country, we can do two things. One is we can call the convention of the states, and two, we can stop the runaway spending. We can put real limitations on the ability of the federal government to tax and spend. We can put term limits on Congress. We can fix the general welfare clause. We can fix the commerce clause. We can have real changes in this country that matter, and we can rein in the Supreme Court by making sure the states pick the members of the Supreme Court, not Washington, D.C. We can keep genuflecting to Washington, D.C. and keep hoping that it'll get better, or we can take away their power. And the Constitution gave us this solution. Now, he's disparaged George Mason a long time. He didn't answer my point earlier. He repeated himself. You notice that? He repeated his accusation against George Mason. He didn't deal with the fact that George Mason's recommendation passed unanimously. The founding fathers unanimously agreed with me. The states should have the unilateral power to amend the Constitution to stop the abuse of power by Washington, D.C. And not only do they want it, that's what they wrote in Article 5. And the idea that they wrote something that gives Harry Reid power is historically and legally and factually preposterous. He's making assertions with no backing. No backing whatsoever. The word call does not mean what he says it means, any more than the word jury trial in the Sixth Amendment means they can try you and make you prove yourself innocent, because it doesn't say it. There's a historically understood record of what these terms mean, and it means one state, one vote. Delegates are appointed by the states. The instructions come from the states. The states control the process from beginning to end, because that was the point entirely. The point was to give the states the ability to stop runaway federal power. Ladies and gentlemen, we are governed by the Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court. We can't ignore it. All of Andy's arguments ignore that reality. Everything he says tonight ignores the reality that we're actually governed by the Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court. And we can either ignore it or we can fight them. I prefer to fight. And so fear based on ignoring reality, I don't think is the right way to go for our country. I have 10 children and 17 grandchildren. The irony is I won a college speech contest advocating zero population growth. It's absolutely a true story. The legacy that I'm leaving for my children is not a 3-acre piece of land and a house that have a hard time dividing it up. The legacy I want to leave my children is the ability to have a self-governing nation. And if we don't have a self-governing nation, if we wait for martial law to be imposed, which is Andy's proposed time where we try to do the right thing, if we wait for martial law to be imposed, we wait until our children are full slaves. They're already going to be partial slaves, dominantly slaves, just paying off the debt that we're incurring today. I do not want to enslave my children or my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren. The purpose of the Constitution was to ensure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Politics, as usual, will not ensure the blessings of liberty to our posterity, nor really to ourselves. We've got drones. We've got the NSA spying on us. Ladies and gentlemen, you can ignore the reality or you can fight. I ask you to join me and fight.